Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. It is a great privilege and high honor to have with us for a full hour a woman who I'm privileged to say has been a senior fellow of the Center for Security Policy for a number of years, the director of Former Muslims United, founder of Arabs for Israel, and the author of now, I believe, five best-selling books, including her brand new one, Wholly Different, Why I Chose Biblical Values Over Islamic Values. She is, of course, Noni Darwish. Noni, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. It's so good to have you with us, and congratulations on Wholly Different. I'm so pleased it's being well received.
My pleasure, Frank. Thank you so much.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the thesis of your book. It will sort of serve as an introduction for our hour-long conversation about many of the points you develop in it. But talk a little bit about the differences, as you see it, between biblical values and those associated with particularly Islam's doctrine of Sharia. We're often told that Islam is just another Abrahamic religion. What are the differences that you see, and why do they matter?
Well, when I moved to the United States, I really saw the differences right away, even before I left Islam. I was still considering myself a Muslim. I went to a mosque here, and I was told, don't assimilate. We are not supposed to assimilate in America. And that made me feel very uncomfortable. I didn't understand why. So I lived in America, and everything, even if you go to the market in America and you see a worker greeting you saying, good morning, may I help you? Even that in itself reflects values of biblical values of this nation. Even among atheists, atheists in America, they think they have discovered human rights on their own. And they don't know that it was all given to them by biblical values. So after living many years, and I started going to synagogues, churches, and I heard, for instance, we're all sinners. That was a revolutionary statement, because in Islam, they are all sinners. All the sermons in the mosques are all about the bad sinners called the kafir. And we are Muslims because we're innocent. So that's how I started. And then the deeper I got, the scary part is it's not just mere laws of Sharia. The laws of Sharia came as a result of the values of Islam that are opposite to the values. Simple things like Jesus came down to save us. In Islam, we have to save Allah's reputation, Muhammad's reputation, by killing his enemies and killing anybody who insults them.
Yeah, so this really speaks, Noni Darwish, to a sort of a totally different set of norms, not just values, but sort of the concept of killing others in the certainly the New Testament part of the Bible is very clearly, you know, at odds with Christ's teachings. And what you're suggesting here is that far from being at odds with the teachings of Allah as relayed through Muhammad, they are part and parcel of what Muslims, faithful Muslims, Sharia-adherent Muslims are enjoined to practice. Is that right?
Absolutely. In the churches, you hear that Jesus died for us, and he gave us, he saved us through grace, without us doing anything for him. And I'm not trying to preach the gospel here. I'm just telling you what's the mindset of Muslims, you know, how different it is from the mindset of a Westerner who lives under biblical values. In Islam, we must die for Allah. In the West, Allah, God, died for us. We don't have to do anything. In Islam, we must die for Him if we want to make Him happy so He can take us to heaven. He allows us into heaven.
So, Noni, when you talk about this, I mean, clearly there are Muslims who embrace these traditions and the Sharia doctrine and seek to fulfill its requirements, including by killing themselves as long as they're killing the kafirs and otherwise pleasing Allah. There are Muslims, of course, and I think you were an example of such Muslims until you decided to leave Islam, who don't seek to practice that. How do you differentiate between such people? Is it possible to make, in your judgment, a real distinction between them?
Well, that's what the West is concerned about. How do we differentiate between the good and the bad Muslims? Which is, you know, and actually, I believe that every culture has a degree of goodness. I'm not speaking about people here. I'm speaking about the values and the criteria that Islam puts as a measurement of who is a good Muslim. And it doesn't mean that every Muslim adheres to it. Of course, some of the nicest people I know are Muslims. If you go visit Egypt and see my family there, you'll think they are some of the nicest people you'll ever meet. Kind, sweet, but believe it or not, when I started writing about peace with Israel, forgiving Israel, pro-Israel, they all condemned me, and I've been cut off from my family, and I've been disinherited. And my mom is a Egypt. So the problem is not the people here. It's the measurement. The criteria, every culture comes with a criteria of good and bad. And that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Noni Darwish, when you talk about good Muslims versus bad Muslims, of course, one thing that it's important to be clear about is that for the purposes of their faithful adherence to the Quran, the teachings of the Hadith, the Sharia developed from both of them, the good Muslim is the Muslim that many of us in the West would consider a bad Muslim, namely a potentially very dangerous one. And what we would consider in the West a good Muslim, that is to say, one that is assimilating, one that wants to be part of the American dream, one that does not pose a threat to any of us, is actually considered to be an apostate, I believe, under this tradition. Is that right?
Absolutely. Your observation is correct, but there's something more than just that. When I was a Muslim, I never killed anybody. But I believed that those who did jihad were holy people. And sometimes you would think that people who don't do the jihad themselves, these are the good Muslims, okay? So in my heart, and I'm speaking by what my heart felt as a Muslim, I really felt that these people were doing Allah's work. And even though I didn't do it, I prayed for them inside my heart.
And it was your responsibility to support them as they did so as well,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. That's how I felt. I was wired to be sympathetic to them.
But beyond that, is it not the case, Noni Darwish, that you are obliged to provide a portion of your earnings to support the jihadists as well? Is that not one of the prescribed purposes towards which the so-called zakat is supposed to be applied?
Absolutely. And all Muslim nations, believe it or not, somehow some of their money goes towards terrorism.
Yeah. Well, the jihad, of course, is terrifying in part. We're going to talk more about that terrifying piece of this jihadist program, as well as other aspects of it, and most especially the importance that we should be attaching as we consider bringing people into this country, whether it's under President Trump's new executive order or otherwise, that they share our values. That and more with Noni Darwish right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. You are visiting with Noni Darwish through the miracle of our programming with her for a full hour to talk about her new book, Wholly Different, Why I Chose Biblical Values Over Islamic Values, and much that she has learned over the years since she left her native Egypt, came to the United States, and subsequently left Islam. And she has ever since been teaching the rest of us many of the things that are most important to our understanding of the challenge we're facing from Sharia and its adherents. Noni Darwish, we were talking a little bit about jihad a moment ago, and we're told frequently that jihad is really about personal betterment and struggle. It is not about holy war. As someone who has studied this closely and was herself a Muslim for many years, what would you say about that?
Well, if you check also the values of Islam, why did Islam come 600 years after Christ? And that will explain to you why jihad has to be central in Islam. The reason there is jihad is because of the nature of Islam. Why did Islam come 600 years after Christ? Islam came as a rejection, as a rebellion against the Bible, a rebellion against biblical values. And that was, in my opinion, the original culture clash. The culture clash that everybody talks about.
The clash of civilizations, I think you're referring to there.
Exactly. Is between Europe and America and the Middle East. Well, I discovered in my research that the original clash of civilizations happened inside the Middle East. Christianity and Judaism burst in the Middle East, and not all cultures in the Middle East wanted to abide by biblical values and values of the Ten Commandments. Some cultures resisted within the Middle East. And the most brutal culture that could not adapt to values of the Ten Commandments were Arabia.
Noni Darwish is our guest for this full hour, a senior fellow of the Center for Security Policy and author of Wholly Different. Noni, you were just talking about the Arabian culture or civilization, if you will, resisting Christianity at the time and Judaism. Talk a little bit about how that translated into the evolution of Islam.
Absolutely. Islam evolved as a rebellion against biblical values. The whole Middle East eventually, it became mostly Jewish and Christian, except for the Arabia. So Arabia was the last standing area of the Middle East that resisted biblical values. Arabia was too proud to be just a province of the Byzantine Empire. They didn't want to be governed by some foreign government in Turkey. And so what happened is they wanted to resist. And also they were going to lose the power of Mecca to Jerusalem. Mecca needed the pilgrims coming to it from all over Arabia, and that's how they made their living. If Arabia was going to become Christian or Jewish, and it was already being penetrated by a lot of Christians and Jewish tribes living, and it was on the verge of becoming Christian, just like Egypt. And what happened is they came to a point where either they're going to lose their culture and become part of the Byzantine Empire, whom they despised and trusted, or have a rebellion against the Bible. That rebellion, in my opinion, is called jihad.
Indeed. So, Noni Darwish, as you look at this jihad, it's most associated, certainly in Western societies that have been afflicted by it, with violence and terrorism. Presumably, that is primarily because it's the preferred approach. It's the most efficient way of achieving the submission that that Sharia requires of all Muslim and non-Muslim alike, as you know. But there are these other means of advancing the jihad as well. Would you talk a little bit about the Hijra, for example, or demographic jihad? And we've talked a little bit about the financial piece, zakat and so on, but also the civilization jihad.
Absolutely. The mindset of every enemy. When I was a Muslim, I wasn't even very religious. So even among the least religious Muslims, it is wired in our head that we have to live under an Islamic government and a leader who's a Muslim. Just the feeling of living under a set of laws that are not Islamic is uncomfortable if you believe in Islam. So you don't have to be holding a gun or blowing up things. It is, it's more, we are told we have to live under an Islamic ruler. And for that sake, for that purpose, any government we live under, we don't feel it's legitimate totally. That's what every Friday prayer, when people go to the mosque, that's what they're fed constantly. So the goals of Islam for jihad is a lot more than the violent side. The violent side is the obvious side to the West. But in the heart of every Muslim, they are told and they are wired to want a kind of rebellion against the government they live under, and spreading Islam through any form, financial support, immigration into that uncomfortable land called Dar al-Harb.
The House of War.
The House of War, and living in it and waiting for somebody to penetrate that government and making it abide to Sharia law. That is in our hearts.
Right. And Noni, in this idea of penetrating the kufr's governments, the infidels' governments in the House of War, and subverting them to make them submit to Sharia, sounds very much like the plan of the Muslim Brotherhood, which, as you know, started in your native Egypt back in 1928. For that purpose, most immediately, of course, in Egypt and elsewhere in the Middle East, but it seems to have truly global ambitions. Is that correct?
Absolutely. When the mayor of London, Khan, he's a Muslim, and he came to visit America a few months ago last year. And in his speech in America, he told Muslims, don't assimilate. I mean, that is jihad. That is a kind of jihad. He's telling them, don't assimilate. Unfortunately, there are some, Western progressives who look at assimilation also. I mean, they really are handing them what they want on a silver platter.
Yeah. This is, of course, the red-green axis about which we speak often here at Secure Freedom Radio. Noni Darwish, we have to pause for a moment. When we come back, I want to talk to you a bit more about that phenomenon of the involvement in the enabling of the jihad or the Sharia supremacist agenda by unlikely people on the left. That and more with Noni Darwish, the author of Wholly Different, Why I Chose Biblical Values Over Islamic Values. Straight ahead.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back. Our guest for this full hour, I'm very pleased to say, is Noni Darwish, the author of many books, including most recently Wholly Different, Why I Chose Biblical Values Over Islamic Values. She is also the author of The Devil We Don't Know, The Dark Side of Revolutions in the Middle East, Cruel and Usual Punishment, The Terrifying Global Implications of Islamic Law, and Now They Call Me Infidel, Why I Renounced Jihad for America, Israel, and the War on Terror. Noni, thank you again for the generous time you're giving us today to explore some of these things in detail. And I did want to come back to a point we discussed just before the break, and that is the fact that people who have as among their most important constituencies feminists, homosexuals, Jews, non-believers, and the like are among those who seem to be most insistent in helping the jihadists advance their agenda of trying to get our submission, which would be absolutely fatal to the people in those constituencies. Am I missing something here? Or if that's in fact what's going on, how do you make sense of the seeming, well, self-destructive attitude of some of those enabling the jihadists from the left?
Well, it's the same confrontation that happened in the 7th century between Islamic values and biblical values. In the West, there are forces that are, they look at biblical values as their enemy, even though they are advocating values of the Bible at the same time as secular. For instance, freedom of speech, they advocate democracy, they advocate the government should serve the people. All of these are biblical values, and they just take it for granted that they've invented it or something. So what happened is both Islamic goals and the progressives' goals are now coming together against biblical values, against the values that that America is built upon. And I don't know if they are conscious of it, which is would be really catastrophic if they are conscious of it. But obviously, they are working together hand in hand without any reservations. The far left is, it's unbelievable for me to see the Women's March with Madonna and the far left feminists who in the 60s were burning their bras and wanted actual revolution like men, standing hand in hand with Islamic feminists who are wearing their burqa with pride.
Yeah, so-called feminists, the Linda Sarsours of the world who are anything but feminists.
That is what Islam produces. Believe it or not, Islam produces a kind of feminism that is not anti-establishment, but pro-Islamic establishment, pro-Sharia. If you want to be a prominent woman, respected in the Muslim world, if you want to be to have a great job in the Muslim world, if you want to have your picture in the media as the symbol of what a good woman is, you wear your hijab with pride. You say, I want to give my sons to jihad. And you say, I am for Sharia. And that is symbolized by Linda Sarsour.
Yeah, and you submit to your menfolk unquestioningly. Noni, one of the things that I want to just tease out as well with you is a particular aspect of this peculiar behavior between, on the one hand, the Islamic or Sharia supremacists and the left, that is manifesting in the form of something called interfaith dialogue. And I'm sure you're very familiar with the syndrome, but for the benefit of our audience, talk a little bit about how this fits into what I think is really the classic Muslim Brotherhood play of suborning and exploiting those who are evidently willfully blind to the true agenda of these supremacists.
Great question. Because whenever I speak, I have in my audience some women who stand up, and actually a Jewish woman a few months ago I was speaking, and she asked, she told me, but what you're saying, it contradicts what the Muslims tell me in my faith dialogue.
The bridge building, yes.
Yes, and I told her, where is your group? She said, I go back and forth from in Israel, and there is a group of interfaith dialogue in Israel, and all the Muslim women there are so sweet, and they tell me that we want to live in peace. And then I asked her, who initiated this group? She said, in Israel. I said, how many interfaith dialogue groups exist in the Middle East inside the on the other side, on the Muslim side, between Jews and Christians and Muslims? She said, I don't know. I said, it's zero. I asked her, how many interfaith dialogue groups exist between Shiites and Sunnis? And she said, I don't know. I said, none, zero. And this is because interfaith dialogue is not an Islamic value. It's a biblical value. The Bible wants to coexist. Islam wants to replace.
You know, Noni, I'm familiar with a quote, as I'm sure you are, from a very influential Islamist strategist by the name of Sayyid Qutb, I believe from Egypt originally. And in his book, Milestones, he talks about this is a paraphrase, but I think it's pretty close, the chasm between the believer and the kuffars, as you call them, the unbelievers, the infidels, is so vast that no bridge can be built to span it except for the purpose of bringing the unbeliever to Islam. And it sounds from what you're saying as though that's really the agenda here of the Muslim Brotherhood and others engaged in this kind of interfaith dialogue. Is that right?
Exactly. It's not an Islamic value to build bridges with or to seek peace with non-Muslims. So that lady really symbolizes how the West looks at Islam in the eyes of what, you know, these are activities that Muslims engage in the West and inside, on the side, inside Israel. But they are supposed to, they are not supposed to be sincere. Islam violated all the Ten Commandments. And that's a whole chapter in my new book, Frank.
Yeah. Her new book is Wholly Different, Why I Chose Biblical Values Over Islamic Values. And Noni, I think that really cuts right to the heart of the matter, doesn't it? That you're talking about a political, military, legal program in Sharia that is designed to defeat and displace this other program of Christianity and Judaism.
Exactly. And do deceit. Deception is one of the names of Allah, the deceitful, and the conquering is the goal. So I think when I told this to that lady, who was telling me that, how could you say they don't want peace? They were telling me in my interfaith group, and you're now not telling me that. And her jaw dropped and left. And she was upset.
Yeah. No, that's pretty standard, and also it's standard in my experience to have the Christian and Jew be the person who will be most aggressive with you in condemning what you're saying. We're going to talk a little bit more about that kind of condemnation that my friend and greatly respected colleague Noni Darwish has been subjected to, including at Georgetown University, my alma mater, here recently. That and what should Donald Trump and the rest of us be doing to administer a little tough love to Muslims, as Noni calls for. Stay tuned for all of that and more right after this.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. To securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We're in our final segment with Noni Darwish, one of the former Muslims who has been most courageous in trying to help all of us understand the challenges posed by Sharia supremacism and the necessity for defeating it. Noni is the author, most recently, of a terrific new book, Wholly Different, Why I Chose Biblical Values Over Islamic Values. Noni, this has brought you into a whole new slew of, well, criticisms and character assassination by folks like the Southern Poverty Law Center and others. You have, as have I, been described as a racist and bigot and hater and Islamophobe. Give me your quick response to such name-calling and why you think it's sent your way.
And this is also another description, which is the name-calling part of the American left, which is very similar to Islamism. Why is name-calling a solution by the progressives? And this is what they resort to. They don't want to negotiate, talk. They don't want debate. They don't want to hear the truth.
Isn't it really, at the end of the day, Noni, about silencing you?
Exactly. It's all about silencing me. And you know, there is nothing hateful in truth. Truth is truth. And if they accuse me that I'm hateful because I'm speaking the truth, first of all, I'm not speaking about people. All my discussion, in all my talks, I'm speaking about the ideology of Islam, the criteria by which a Muslim should live his life. And that criteria, if you follow it, you're dangerous. You're dangerous to Western civilization. So it's very sad for me to see that the Islamic tactics of putting people down and shaming, using shaming tactics, using name-calling. The word racist in America is so bad and badly used and abused, and it reminds me of, in Islam, calling people, are you an apostate? You're a kafir? Are you infidel? The word infidel is used to silence people. They use the word infidel in the Muslim world to silence journalists, authors, writers, reformists. And the minute you say in the word infidel, and that's what I, by the name of my first book, is to silence me so I don't say the truth. And that is the same word as racist in the West.
Again, it silences. It is suppressing debate. It is suppressing an exchange of ideas. It is suppressing the truth. And this is what's so frightening about it. Talk a little bit about your recent experience at Georgetown in that regard, Noni. Charles Murray, of course, had an even worse one recently, a very prominent author, but for not dissimilar reasons, broader than, of course, your focus on Islam. But talk a little bit about this phenomenon.
Yeah, I was shocked that even among the Republican students that invited me to speak, one of them actually left the group because they invited me to speak. So, and he calls himself Republican. And so the problem, the propaganda has even poisoned some Jewish students, some Republican students, because the students are young. They don't know. And they hear the word racist, bigot, you're a phobic, you're this. So they get scared. And these are the tactics that I grew up with under Islam. And it's moving to the West. It's very sad, but I have to tell you, when I went in from a back door because the rioters were in the other side of the room I was speaking in. There were police in the room in every corner. They escorted me to go in, and there was very few inside the audience. There were very few of the people who were harassing at the door. My supporters who were coming to hear me were harassed at the door. They were given flyers saying Nani is a racist and a bigot and a hater, and they were very offended. They came in, they looked scared.
I understand, Noni Darwish, that this was brought to the campus by the Bridge Initiative, speaking of bridge building, of the Al-Waleed bin Talal Center for Muslim-Christian Understanding. It happens the night before you appeared, I believe. Azra Nomani was similarly reviled by some in the audience. She didn't get quite the threats that you did, but another, in her case, still a Muslim, who felt very strongly that there were problems within her faith tradition along the lines, in many cases, the ones you've mentioned. Let me turn quickly to your point made recently in a Gatestone Institute paper, Noni Darwish, on the 31st of January, and I commend all of Noni's writings to you, but this was a particularly important article, it seems to me. You talked about something you basically called tough love for Muslims, and the importance of really giving them a reason to change their course rather than to, you know, persist in behavior that that is not only not a shared value with us, but very much detrimental to our values in the United States and our Constitution and the freedoms that it guarantees. Talk a little bit about that quickly, if you would, please.
Yeah, there are the Muslim world right now is in turmoil over over Islam and how it applies and how Muslims want to live a better life. So the reason there is turmoil and wars and revolutions and counter-revolutions is because there are segments of Muslims who don't want to live under Sharia. And with the West embracing the radicals, and we are not doing Islam and Muslims a favor. Unfortunately, the West, by embracing and telling Muslims that everything you do is a religious right, you want to live under Sharia, that's okay, that's a religious right, when in fact, it's not a religious right. It's not a religious right to go do jihad. It's not a religious right to want to live and honor kill your child. That's not a religious right. So the West, really, if you really love Muslim people, you have to support the reformers, the side of Islam that wants to live and let live. And when the West and especially the progressives embrace that Muslim radicals, which Muslim Brotherhood, that side of Islam, we're not doing Islam a favor. Islam, in order for it to reform, the West must tell the Muslims, we cannot accept you the way you are.
Yeah. Noni Darwish, this is an incredibly important point, and I wish we had more time to talk about it, but we will have you back soon to do that. In the meantime, thank you for your clarity on all of these issues and for your leadership, really, in helping the rest of us think through what has to be done to protect our country and our freedoms from those, again, not all Muslims, but the Muslims who seek to impose Sharia upon us. We're very grateful to you, Noni. Congratulations again on Wholly Different, Why I Chose Biblical Values Over Islamic Values, and all the work you're doing at the Great Gatestone Institute and with us at the Center for Security Policy and more. Keep it up and come back to us soon. I hope the rest of you will come back to us again tomorrow, same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.